Beka.
MEC, ukuphi? Ukuphi?
Akasizwa umuntu wa.
Ukuphi? Angitshele, uthi i-ring yakho iphi? I'll check. I-ring. Yeah, somebody lost i-ring like in the July.
Yeah.
Ngicabanga ukuthi kuwe thina sambuze lo Steven yakhe. Akutshe.
What's this then, Bako? The only issue is out now.
In a
I have this tool in my mouth, and I rap. This one. But it's good, of course, to come to us, because I have an outstanding question.
Right. Honourable members, I think members are back now. The department is ready to start. I'll give what I can think. A good day, honourable members, as well as the department. And they are, first of all, I'd like to apologise maybe to the department, maybe to start so late. We didn't anticipate that will take so long. But I think our apology will be taken because it was part of our line function. We had visitors from the province as well as from the provincial and the local government from Mpumalanga province. There were some outstanding issues with them. Therefore, I would like to apologize on the behalf of the committee, and then without wasting my time, maybe to allow you to introduce yourself, and so that to also give it to the members to introduce themselves, and then we start with our meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Martin Mapisa. I am a Deputy Director General responsible for policy, research, and monitoring and evaluation within the Department of Human Settlement. With me, members from our department, from the Special Investigations Unit of our department. They will introduce themselves as directed. And maybe first of all, before I hand over to them, I'd like to apologize on behalf of our newly appointed Director General. He is attending the Portfolio Committee across the street, and the meetings are running parallel. So he dedicated me to come with this group here, and then he is across. He said I should sincerely apologize because this is his first appearance, and he's quite tied up. Maybe should introduce yourself briefly.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Vanessa Somia from the Special Investigating Unit. It's the SIU. It's not based within the department. We report to the president. We're a parastatal, and I'm the national head of the investigations into the Department of Human Settlements.
Good morning. My name is Kumuyisile Khaisali. I'm the chief director for internal audit, risk management, and special investigations in the Department of Human Settlements. We coordinate the work that the Special Investigating Unit is doing for us on investigations, national investigations into housing delivery.
Thank you.
We have two presentations, the one by the Special Investigation.
Before that, Mama, your hand was up.
I'm Abidja Libohani. I'm a member of this select committee, and I'm from Limpopo. And I heard that we are having deputies here, and always we need a director, head of director general or whatever. So I don't know whether we are supposed to continue with this meeting at that level, or what is it that we must do. Are we sticking to how we operate, or what?
Okay, I'll respond on that one. Mama, may you please introduce yourself as well. We'll come back to that one.
think I'm Priscilla Temba, member of the committee from Mpumalanga.
Umuntu wakhona Zulu Mbongiseni kwaZulu waseNatal, member leli committee.
I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and also member of the committee.
Good morning everybody, I'm Dirk Veldman, member of the committee, I'm from Gauteng.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Zola Mlenzana, a member of this select committee representing the Eastern Cape in this committee. Thanks.
Nna Raseriti Kgopolang Tau. Ke emetse mona sebakeng sa Northern Cape Kapa Bokone.
Masibonge Mzwakali, I'm the committee clerk. Thank you.
I'll request people at the back to introduce themselves as well.
Morning, Ismail Hussain from PNG.
Yes, my name is Patsy Bande, the chair of this select committee. Honourable members, what I would like to appeal. You see, we must be able also ourselves to distinguish some of this presentation. Yes, I agree, it is strictly prohibited. We are very strict, in particular in Stratplan. Stratplan as well as towards budget debates. That's where we can be very strict to say we don't compromise. We propose that we must be given either it can be a minister or else it can be a deputy minister from the executive side. And if both of them are not available, we can accept if it's the director, not a DDG. But this one is not towards the strat plan or a budget debate. I think we are over with our budget debate. Therefore, I will maybe recommend that we allow them to give us a presentation. From the department side, don't be surprised. From our legal experience, that's why honorable members are taking this thing so serious, because some of the departments are undermining us. Always they are sending us junior officials. That's why they feel very strong that similar thing must happen. But I was just clarifying to them that what is the status quo at the moment. Therefore, I request you to continue to give us the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'll start with a presentation by the Special Investigations Unit.
Thank you, members. The presentation is based on the national audit, the work that we are doing with the investigations into fraud and corruption into the delivery of house to the department. The summary of the presentation will deal with the background, where we'll deal with the performance reports that were issued by the Auditor General, and then what action plan did the department take in order to address the issues raised there. And we will then, no, it's the white one. We will then go into how we strategized on the comprehensive approach to these investigations and how that brought our relationship to life with the SIU, Special Investigating Unit. We'll also look at the progress that has been done on the investigations on issues relating to non-qualification of beneficiaries on the housing subsidy system, issues that relate to the hotline referrals, relate other issues that relate to the syndicates that have been identified, the contractors, housing contracts, and the issues that relate to procurement investigations. We'll also be telling the committee about the way forward with regard to the contract investigations, and we'll also be highlighting what are some of the achievements so far. The Office of the Auditor General conducted a performance audit in respect of delivery of houses during 2006 and 2008. The 2006 report highlighted that 7,353 government employees that did not qualify for housing subsidies got housing subsidies. The 2008 report related to 6,974 municipal employees that did not qualify for receiving housing subsidies, but they did. The department, dealing with the issues that were raised by these audit reports, the department then decided that there is a need for a comprehensive approach into dealing with the matters that were raised, and this led to the establishment of the relationship between the department and the Special Investigating Unit. This was sealed through a presidential proclamation that was published in April 2007. This gave them the SIU a national mandate to conduct all these investigations, the investigations that were relating to the issues that were raised in this report. While the investigating unit was the agency that the department decided to bring into the fold in dealing with this, is because the special investigating unit provides an integrated forensic solution, and that is what we were looking for in terms of their act, what their act allows them to do, and the ability for them to be able to deal with the national issues at the nationally, whether it be at local government, provincial or national level. And this integrated solution was going to deal with issues relating to the defaulting contractors, the officials that were involved in unauthorized allocation of houses, and any other related third parties that we'd find were involved in this fraud and corruption. And the other issue was to look at how these payments were done by these for these houses that were issued unlawfully, the payment processes, and what other system weaknesses could they identify, because where there's a need for an investigation, it means the system failed somewhere. Maybe you don't have adequate systems, or you have adequate systems that are not implemented properly, but you need to find out what is the root cause of the problem. And then that will be able, then through those identification of the system weaknesses, we'll be able to get recommendations on how to tighten our own systems. And they also provided, we felt that they also provided a multidisciplinary forensic specialist. They have your forensic auditors, they have your legal people, they can go and prosecute the cases in court. And we thought that was a whole basket of what you would need to deal with the perpetrators in that sense, efficiently. The measures of success that we were looking for, we bring that out through the statistics that are brought out from the outcome of the investigations and the convictions that that have been done, and how the recommendations impact on our systems generally. And they are also able to work closely with the government agencies, your SAPS, your Assets for Future Unit, you name them, they are able to do that, because they also have an enforcement leg, that section that they have there to ensure that the people that have defrauded the department will recover from them. They are also even able to institute legal action against the perpetrators, and they are also operating independently, as this chart will indicate. From the proclamation that has been published, the SIU then, apart from giving us monthly reports and engagement, continuous engagements on the work that they've done, the report to the President and to Parliament, all the work that we have given them to do, the issues that related to the subsidies, this is where the government employees and the municipalities, issues raised by the Auditor General, there was a 5-year SLA that runs from April 2007 to the 31st of March 2012. So it is investigations that are continuing on a yearly basis. And on the contract, there's a 3-year SLA which runs from the 1st of November to March 2012. What does the proclamation entail? It gives the SIU the mandate to investigate fraud and corruption and maladministration into the issues that relate to housing delivery. It covers the period 1994 January to April 2007. This includes investigating administration of low-income housing subsidies, administration and implementation of low-income housing system, loss of state funds allocated to low-income housing, mismanagement and misuse of low-income housing scheme, conduct of government officials resulting in loss or lack of controls over the scheme. What was the focus of the investigations? We prioritized the subsidies based on the relating to non-qualifying beneficiaries. As I said before, the 2006 report related to the government employees, 2008 report related to the municipal employees. What are the objectives that we were looking to achieve? To establish, because the report that the AG gave indicated that there could be, according to the processes that they have done, it highlighted some of what they call the red flags. There could be problems here because, and they gave reasons. And what we needed to do is to actually analyze those red flags to determine whether they were actually irregularities or something else. And we also wanted to identify the reasons for payments to non-qualifying beneficiaries. We wanted to initiate and facilitate legal action to hold all the irregular beneficiaries accountable and prosecute them accordingly. And we also wanted to recover what we have lost in terms of the financial aspects. The second phase of our investigations focuses on contracts. And this deals with the abuse of low-income housing projects, issues that relate to overpayments to contractors, issues that relate to payments to contractors that build inferior housing quality, and then issues where maybe contractors will be paid but there are no houses on the ground. Our objectives for that, we wanted to gain a comprehensive view of the problematic housing projects nationally, because we wanted to select and identify which projects are a problem. We wanted to identify the various abuse typologies and trends nationally to assist with the, to make sure that we better our systems in the department. And we also wanted to enforce, facilitate the enforcement of outstanding contractual obligations that seem to be delaying the delivery. We also intend to recover payments from contractors where there is a need for us to recover, and we will also pursue officials and third parties implicated in this misconduct, obviously using the legal remedies. As we said, the SIU has got, we brought them into the fold because they've got that capacity to take the investigation from the start to even convictions in court. We wanted to identify where the system gaps are that led to these sort of issues taking place. In November 2009, the Minister of Human Settlements, Tokyo Sofwale, instituted what we call a national audit. In the national audit, he, from just looking at statistics, listening to the people, and decided that there's just a bigger problem than just your housing subsidies where government officials are involved and municipal people are involved. There could be other ways that we are being, the system is being defrauded. And through analysis and working together with the SIU, it came to light that there were also syndicates that are operating within this gap that are dealing with the renting and selling of the RDP houses. There were also issues that related to procurement investigations where these issues are about, maybe issues of conflict of interest and so on and so forth. And then there are also hotline referrals where people would refer matters to the minister and we analyze them and we refer some to the special investigation unit to investigate, and some we do it internally. On the case, on the issue of the syndicates, we wanted to establish who's responsible for selling and renting out of these houses and also to break down this network. On the procurement, we want to identify irregularities on the conduct of the officials. On the hotlines, we want to establish whether there's merit to some of the whistleblowing that has been done so that we can do the investigations and give feedback to the whistleblowers and to the relevant authorities. With the profile of the subsidies, what we found out is that the fraudulent activity that occurs there is that people misrepresent their employment status, their income, they give outdated or understate their salary advices, their marital status or the income of their spouses, because those need to be, they are part of what is looked at when an application is made to determine whether you qualify. First, you qualify. If you do qualify, which category do you qualify for? And we wanted to, the other issues that came out are the overpayments that occurred due to incorrect selection of subsidy types that are to be given to people, given their income details, and the errors in processing of the application forms. That will be that the applicant has applied, submitted a form, but the officials that are processing it in the department make certain mistakes that relate to some losses for the department. What are the key findings as of analyzing the AG report? We found that the AG raised 7,353 red flags, potential irregular cases. And then in analyzing that, we needed to look at what does our housing code say. It says the application is, you use the application date, not the date of approval, to allocate the subsidy. We found that in some instances the AG looked at the approval date instead of the application date. And out of that analysis, we then, we're working with the SIU, we requested provinces to provide us with the records. Out of the records that we received relating to the government employees, we received 4,413 records were handed over for investigation. Out of that number, 47% were found to be actually irregular, whereas 53% were people that actually qualified. Out of the municipal report, 5,440 cases were handed over to the SIU. An analysis was done, found that 76% of the total number there qualified and 24% were found to be irregular. What the SIU also did for us is that based on this analysis, then further put the process into further analysis where they found additional red flags that compared to the AG that found 7,000 red flags, the SIU then found 31,000 irregular cases that we are on the process of looking at as well. Out of the investigations, what have we found and what have we done with our findings? The department has effectively closed the gap based on the recommendations that were given out of the investigation. Where misrepresentations were likely to be made, this has been combated via enhancing the application verification. We run the application on the housing subsidy system. We run the personal check. We have a relationship with the UIF system where we check the people whether they are taxpayers, and that will be able to give us information of what income the people are having. Home affairs, we do that. So we decided to expand our relationship with other systems that will help us to actually satisfy ourselves of the information that is being presented for application. With regard to overpayments, the department then needed to introduce a second level authorization, which would allow the forms to also have a second checkpoint where people will be able to sign and put their names and sign their names, so that when we find something is wrong with the application form, we are able to identify who was the person that was processing it and be able to deal with the situation, whatever the outcome is or whatever the red flag is about the application. And on the accountability of increasing the accountability of officials, we upgraded the filing systems. There were problems with the filing system. Currently the recommendation for upgrading that, and then ensuring so that we can ensure that we have audit trails. Issues of the fictitious IDs, this has been reduced because we deal with the ID validation controls that has been increased, especially with the system that we run with the Home Affairs. The other issue, we are speaking about the revision of the application form. The other issue that we has been recommended to us is that a gap that was found on our act that failed to indicate to criminalize when officials have not complied with the housing code in processing the application forms. And that's a fact that the department needs to look at. And we also, so that will be able to help us to actually address the unlawfulness, the unlawful conduct in obtaining subsidies. The hotline referrals, a total of 23 referrals has been received from the minister's hotline. Currently, two of the referrals have already been finalized and the reports are currently being drafted. The other cases are actually at the initial stage of the investigation. We also found that some of the information that comes from the hotline is a bit problematic in terms of guiding the investigation. So we a need has been identified to train the call center staff to make sure that they know what questions to ask and how to get information from the whistleblowers. And to this, the SIU has been very kind to dedicate a team of four investigators who will specifically deal with the minister's hotline referrals. On the syndicate investigations, we have so far found that there are seven syndicates that are operating within Gauteng. Investigations into two of these syndicates is at the reporting stage. These cases emanated from investigations into subsidies. Subsidies were being investigated, you sort of get an idea of what really causes this, where does this come from, and we found that some people are not operating by themselves. It's a long chain of people that are in different points to make sure that these things go through. And what's the typical modus operandi? Houses are sold to unqualifying beneficiaries that are not even on the housing subsidy. HSS is the housing subsidy system. By certain councillors, we found that there are councillors that are involved in this, where you find houses are sold for between 6,000 rand and 25,000 rand. The witnesses, unfortunately, we are struggling because the witnesses are scared to come forward, but we are really will not be demoralized by that. We'll make every effort to try and get the information that we need. And in KwaZulu-Natal, already two arrests have been made in respect of the departmental officials who sold state houses. On the contracts, the approach is that the investigation took was to conduct 60 walkthroughs in all nine provinces. to determine, to understand how the flow of the process goes so that we can be able to identify where the key control points are. Out of the system walkthroughs, a technical analysis was conducted on about 9,548 housing projects. An aspect, as the SIU has got a variety of aspects, ran the analysis and to identify priority contracts for possible investigation. Because from the system walkthrough, you get to understand what is the procedure that needs to be followed, and then you find the projects that have not complied with such a process, and that those are the ones that would be identified as priority cases for investigation. All the problematic contracts that have been identified, they underwent a rigorous selection process to identify out of those that seemed to be problematic out of the first analysis, they underwent a second one to pinpoint what the issues are. And we have, for this year, identified a list of 100 contracts that are problematic that need to be investigated, and 22 contracts have been selected for this year, 2010-11, for investigation, 22 for investigation, and these investigations are currently underway. What are the key outcomes? What we are looking for is to identify the blockage points in the contract value chain, or to ensure that the specific performance by contractors on their contractual obligations. We want to set aside the contracts and recover payments where it's due. We want to address improper conduct emanating from such issues as the non-delivery. Potential legal outcomes may include claiming damages from the parties who defaulted, facilitate criminal action, including those colluding parties. We will recommend disciplinary action against officials of the department, be that provincial or elsewhere, that were involved. And we will show removal of such contractors from the government database, enforce restriction on them, and this restriction needs to follow. It follows there's a process that needs to be followed to get to a point where a contractor has been blacklisted. Restriction is sort of blacklisting them from the database. The investigations on the contract so far, we up to since March 2009. What we have done is, we've done the data analysis, we've done the walkthroughs, now we are at the investigation stage. So we are beginning to look into these cases one by one so that we can begin to implement, identify what the problems are and take action on the cases. I won't go through this, it's just the steps that we'll be looking at, but the process is the data analysis was done through of the information that is available, the walkthroughs have been done. Out of the walkthrough, we selected that 100 contractors, and now we are investigating 20 in this year. And this 20 is split in two provinces, there's two or three per province, and there's dedicated capacity from the SIU to deal with each of these cases in each province. So they'll be running parallel. What is the proposed way forward? As I've said, the 22 contracts that we are dealing with this year, the team that the SIU has been able to provide us is three investigators, managers, and specialists in each province. What we need to appreciate is that this is a very labor-intensive process dealing with contractors, because you need to look at how they were procured, they were brought into the business, how they have been, the contracts have been managed, how the project has been managed, how payments have been processed, who certified what, was it correct, and those kind of things, and who was involved inside. So it's very labor-intensive, and very a lot of details will need to be looked at. To be able to get to the findings. And at the same time, as we find what we are looking for, and we find people have defrauded us or have not performed according to the contract, we will run a parallel process where recommendations will be made through the Minister's Office for restriction of these contractors from the database of government. What we've also what we are looking for in terms of trying to look at the officials, our officials who are involved, we also need to do a disclosure database for the department. Human settlement is a high risk function where anybody, and we all know that anybody who's anybody can start up a construction company. They don't have to have a certificate. They go and get John from the street who has a certificate, and then that's how we get poor quality. That's how we get some of these people running out of money, because they are, you see, a lot of things. There are a lot of reasons why projects are not moving, and there are a lot of reasons why projects have poor quality. Some issues are from the capacity that we don't have in the department to monitor, or maybe some people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then we do the procurement investigations as well. These investigations are currently underway. 62 officials have been identified that are doing business with the department, and this includes people at the provincial, at the national, and not 62. Investigations in respect of disclosures have been initiated. This will assist us to determine the link between our own officials with the suppliers or contractors that the department is appointing. Also, 14 service providers have been identified that use the same VAT number. There's going to be a joint initiative with SARS to investigate these cases to determine what is going on there. And then the highlights of the work that is being done under the government employees, 930 unlawful beneficiaries have been prosecuted so far. And when people are prosecuted, they get a criminal case, and they also sign what we call an acknowledgement of debt. They are saying, yes, we acknowledge that we have done something wrong, and they sign, and then repayment schedule is worked out with interest, obviously, and they pay over a certain period, and that's what acknowledgement of debt stands for. So we have signed 1,608 acknowledgement of debt. The value thereof is 21 million rand. And we have had where officials of the of government have been involved, 990 cases of disciplinary cases have been prepared. What we have done there, we have put a team together, we are working together with the DPSA, where the reason is that in order to effect the disciplinary cases and to ensure that the sanctions are consistent, the DPSA distributes the cases that deal with the national government officials, and then the DPSA will then facilitate the distribution of the cases that relate to the provinces, to the premier's offices, and they monitor that process, the feedback, the progress that is being done, then the feedback. And for municipality employees, 257 municipal employees have been prosecuted, and with recoveries, 681 acknowledgement of debt have been signed. The value is 6 million there. To date, we have recovered, in terms of the total acknowledgement of debts that have been signed, about 40 million rand is what has been the value of what we will be getting if everybody pays over, because there are terms that are set. And the red flags for the AG were only 7,000, and the SIU found, when they did further analysis, found that actually it's 31 red flags. at the end of March, the cases that related to the auditor general's red flags have been concluded. Now we are beginning to get into the red flags that have been identified by the SIU themselves out of their own analysis. And in that case, there's been 519 unlawful beneficiaries that have been prosecuted, and 945 acknowledgement of debt. The value is 11 million, and the disciplinary cases 142. Out of the total value of the acknowledgement of debt, people that have already paid into the SIU according to the terms that have been set, the total value is 10 million. To date, SIU has paid over to us about 5 million back to the department.
Why?
Of the why? Because what they do is they do a reconciliation so that they can be, they are able to. To what is making that process slow is that they do a reconciliation into which beneficiaries from which province, and then because they give us a breakdown in that way, because not only for the national department, but we want to understand in each and every province how many, how much. So that's the analysis, and we are expecting a further payment by the end of this month from on the monies that they have collected. This is just the code. After climbing a great hill, only one finds that there are many more hills to climb. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much about your input. Let us open for the members maybe to ask questions. Baba Dao.
No, thank you very much. And I must say we appreciate this kind of a report. It's quite encouraging. And I was just whispering to my dear comrade to say I'm worried now, because most of the people who are going to jail are in actual fact COPE members. Because in the main, many of them were the helm of some of these things. And
yeah, that doesn't matter.
But that's true. I mean, some of the things that I know of in my province is that one of their leaders in COPE, former MEC for Housing and Finance. Therefore, it brings me back to the issue, because I'm trying to check here how many investigations have been undertaken in the Northern Cape in particular, because there's one outstanding, long outstanding matter of the Soul City project. It's a Soul City project, and there was a case also that involved one man who was paid a couple of million rands, who never even constructed a single brick, but then ended up claiming, what is it, insolvency. And therefore, I would want to know in such a matter, how is that particular case going to be dealt with? Because it also falls within the framework of your investigations and so forth. I know also that in my province, there were cases that were investigated by the then Scorpions. I would want to know what would therefore be the status of those investigations, whether if they are also going to form part of what you are dealing with now, or is it, no, the Scorpions handled it, and therefore it's off. Because we know what happened even during the Scorpions era. There were investigations and internal processes. Cases were just dropped, or they were just vanished, and we wouldn't know exactly what happened to those particular cases. I mean, one can give a whole barrage of examples. You know, in the VR area, I know of cases there. In the Upington area, incomplete houses and so forth, where your contractors, well-known contractors in the province, were never brought to book. So we would want really to have an understanding without going to those specifics, but what is the principle? What is it that is going to happen to those particular issues? Coming to the issue of the protection, you're saying one of the challenges that you are faced with is the inability of witnesses to come forward. But you're not telling us what is it that you are putting in place to protect these witnesses. Because we shouldn't take some of these things for granted. It has happened in the Free State, it has happened in Mpumalanga, and elsewhere. There are cases that have not been reported or that have not received national media coverage, like the incidents of Mpumalanga, Free State, and so forth, where people have been murdered by just in being willing to give information. How do you protect them to be able to come forward and give that information voluntarily? And also, for obvious reasons, your main witness would be the beneficiary. That would be your main witness. The very same one whom you say stands to lose money that he or she has paid, stands to lose the house that he or she has paid. If that witness then come forward and say, I'm prepared to lose my house in order to come clean, but what do I get? Would I be able to get my money back? Because it was an innocent exercise. There are those, of course, that knew very well that this is corrupt. But there are those who have been led into some of these things. Well, I understand corruption is corruption, but are there mechanisms to protect those who want to voluntarily come forward and give such information and so forth? Which brings me to your I can't remember which slide it is now. I can't reconcile these numbers. It's your slide number 24. Project highlight subsidies. Maybe I'm reading it wrongly. You say 930 unlawful beneficiaries prosecuted thus far, 930. Recoveries 1,608. Disciplinary cases 990. I don't know. Maybe I've got a problem of reconciling these things. See, disciplinary cases 990. Unlawful beneficiaries prosecuted thus far 930. Now you add 930. Plus this recoveries, what is the amount here that you're talking about? And that goes down to all these other figures, if they can just be simplified for this rural boy from the Northern Cape. Thank you very much.
Other members, let's come this way. Mr. Mlenzane, Honorable Mlenzane. Now I can understand why you opened doors yesterday.
Sure. Remember, I said those who came with ulterior motives. Yeah, maybe it's one of those. Chairperson, I have got, you know, the question raised by Honorable Dow on the work of Scotland. I had it, Honorable Dow, the other way around, on the tool of differentiating between personal or political driven allegations versus real allegations. That slide on hot referral.
Hotline
reference. Yeah. See, it's somehow related to that. I'm raising this person because in a number of cases, during
the era of the Scotland. You know, you particularly the affected beneficiaries would be at some stage just told by the Scorpions that, look, these are petty political issues, and you know, the matter is closed. Nothing further. The other one is how long do you envisage each investigation taking place? I'm raising this question, Chairperson, mindful of the fact that, as Honorable Dow is saying, I don't want to say they run from where to where, but I would say the perpetrators in the majority of cases are no longer with the affected institution, be it the municipality, be it the government department. Now, how do you follow up? Because let's appreciate, Chairperson, that this investigation starts back from 2004. I fully support that one. 1994. Sure, I appreciate that one. Then also, maybe this one I will make a follow-up outside the meeting, because unfortunately the Eastern Cape doesn't appear here. I'm not sure whether it is because of the number of cases that you have to look at, and the result
must
be. Yeah, should be. Because there has been a case where I derived interest, and I've been interacted with the department for some time, and they would demand documentation. The issue of Umzimvu local municipality in the Eastern Cape. I was deriving interest because I know, as a matter of fact, that 500,000, which is half a million, was paid for a special investigation, a forensic investigation. And that report was implicating both the department and the municipality. Hence then, it had to be, you know, dumped one way or the other. But as I'm saying, other cases may have to be followed outside the meeting. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be short. I'm from the Northwest Province, as I said earlier on. And this Bojanala district, in the report, there's 1,521 houses. It is in my constituency. I know exactly where it is and what happened. I've got a lot of photos. It is so. And now what happened on that spot there? The houses is half built, and there's no one of that houses is completed. And what happened now is vandalism is taking place now. On the people is getting in and drag their houses down and take the bricks away and build something on other places. So I want to know, what are you going to do about that? Because it is millions of rand, if you look in the amount of houses. And then another place is in Freiburg. There's also a big, big contract. And nothing happened there. After 2 years, there's only two houses completed. So there's also a lot of things happened there. And I want to know if you're aware of it. And is there any investigation taking place in that area? And the other thing where also big fraud is, and I want to know how you are dealing with it, is the same members of a family got three or four houses on different names. How can you trace these people? Do you have a system in place to trace these people, and what are you doing about that? Thank you very much.
Mam Temba.
Thank you, Jefferson. Mine is on the slide, the project highlights. The 930 unlawful beneficiaries who have been prosecuted. Where is the case now? And then on the municipal employees, are they suspended? Or where are they? And then the disciplinary case is the 990. Is that 990 for all the provinces? Or thank you.
Mama?
What I can say is that thank you for this presentation. This document is very, very informative, and it shows that this department means business. But then I would just like to emphasize that to those who are found guilty of doing mischief, fidgeting with all the processes, they must just go to jail and they must stop working in the government. Because according to the experience, you find that people do wrong things and they are found guilty, and it's said they must continue working whilst they pay back the money they have. They must just be expelled and go to jail. Just to set an example, because by not doing that, we're encouraging these people to go on and on and on, knowing that they will be given a soft treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mine will be just short, not long. You see, I think we all appreciate the move by the department. Also, I would appreciate Mommy and your whip to allow us to give us this day, because this day belongs to a certain select committee, but they provided us so that we can have this opportunity to sit and interact with you. But my question is this one. I fully agree and appreciate on what you are doing, but what measures have you taken to stop this thing not to continue? Because I'm scared of one thing. I'll put an example. I don't think that your system are talking to each other. I don't think so. If you can convince us that your systems are talking to each other, why I'm raising that thing, the things which we're raising from Honorable Member Dawu, Honorable Lenzane, in their provinces, Honorable Kulevald, everybody. And I'll put another example. I've forgotten the name of the guy. There was an incident which they've shown in Third Degree. Not once, maybe twice or thrice. Same guy who was caught right-handed selling houses, RTP houses. And my worry was one. I don't think that there was anything which was taken by you to reprimand or to arrest that guy. While they've shown several times, they exposed him, and he spoke to the media that they must meet somewhere. I'm talking a practical example. You know, convince us. It mustn't be on paper that so many people will be very much grateful if you can give us as well as breakdowns. That 908 unlawful people from Mpumalanga, as Honorable Dao mentioned, a lot of people have been killed in Mpumalanga and open on that one. And we're not happy about that. And it is belief that some of these people are part of whistleblowers. I'm not sure, I don't know, because I don't want to interfere with investigations. But from your side, convince us that some 990 disciplinaries were from the air. And lastly, I wanted to emphasize the issue which was raised by Honorable Member Dow, the issue of insolvent. This is an old tricky from the old regime. I'm not just a racist. A lot of whites survive with that thing. That they will take money being paid and declare an insolvent. After 3 years or 1 year, not even really 1 year, following year, he will open another company and get the very same tender. How do you address those things? And lastly, I've got a lot of things which I can raise, but I wanted to be short. Lastly, you see, another contribution factor besides of illegal documents and legal IDs and the like was that it goes back to your monitoring systems and the system talking to you. Pat can come here in Cape as well, working here. Originally, I was born in Mpumalanga in Bethal. With the loopholes of your system, I can acquire a house in Bethal and get the house and go back to Nelspruit where I've got the house and acquire another RTP house and come here. What system do you have to prevent that? Because that thing, it exposes us not to be able to solve the current challenges which are there. And lastly, Mr. Mlanzane raised something to the previous people that you know from Mpumalanga, very in the horn, people from Mozambique, people from Swaziland, and people from South Africa, not in Mpumalanga only. You go to Limpopo, people from Zimbabwe, there are errors which we can show you that yes, Babs win. And Matatia, and also around the issue of Botswana, there are errors which are declared. What measures have you taken in order to give South Africa the priority in that regard? We know in terms of the approach of the ANC in the United Nations and et cetera, all those commitments. Because these are some of the issues which are creating problems that people, they end up fighting. Like you, do you still remember the issue of what happened in Alexandra, where people were fighting, that they were never considered, and how do you control that situation that people are on the top of the list to get assisted first? And lastly, you have identified some of the areas where there is a tug of war in terms of the issue of, not in this report, but I know that we're still having challenges whereby there is a problem with land, in acquiring land. What measures are you doing in order to assist in that regard? I'll put an example. It is alleged that there was a problem in Mpumalanga, in the Palisade, where the president went. To us, it is an embarrassment where the president went several times, but there's nothing from the local government, there's nothing from the department to assist the people in that regard. What is your program in intervening in that regard? Because it might happen that you're supposed to investigate something and also to assist people with something. I can't believe it can be 100% that it's very difficult or expensive to acquire a land. There were a lot of pockets of land which were owned by government in previously. So, and then I'll thank you and give you an opportunity maybe to respond to those.
Just quick, so okay, that I don't come back.
Yes, sir.
Honorable Mlanzane raises the issue of the Eastern Cape. And I went back to this document and realized that Northern Cape is also not here. Maybe if you can be given an explanation, why is the Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape not part of this document?
Through to my chief. No, in short, we'll be very grateful if you can give us breakdowns as I indicated. Honorable Member Dow, may you please close your mic, please. Thanks. Over to your department.
Thank you, Chair. We will, all three of us, assist each other in answering the questions. The matters raised by Mr. Tau around the Northern Cape Salt City project and the information that he has and the Scorpions matters. I don't know if this is, I think you can say.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the question relating to Salt City, We have, as the presentation says, generated a list of 100 contracts, and I think this forum will appreciate from 9,548 to only select 100 was a formidable task. Mm. So I would just like to explain that when we did the selection, what we took into consideration was money paid out versus actual delivery on the ground. So where you found that if the initial budget was 100 million, and you find that 99 million has been paid out to the developer and there's only one show house, we selected that case. Or if you found that the budget was 100 million and 200 million was paid out, so there's over expenditure of 100%, we selected those projects. We also looked at newspaper clippings where there's been service delivery protests, where there were houses that fell on people. I know in the Eastern Cape, old lady was killed in one of those incidents. So we tried to use an all-encompassing approach to come up with only 100 projects. Just to give you an idea as to the extent of the problem, from the 9,548, more than 50% of all housing projects are problematic. So the SIU had a huge task to even get to a point now where we select 22. And I think the challenge also is that what we find is that most of the, like we said, it's historic investigations from 94. So what I've also done is try to look at the more recent projects within the proclamation period. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that we will leave those developers who took the department for a ride maybe in 95 or 96. We will still get to that point. But I think for us as the investigating unit, we find that there's no quick fix, there's no silver bullet to cure the problems that are in housing. It's more than 15 years now that the problem is going on. So even though we have started with 22 investigations, and I think Soul City, I think, is on that list, so hopefully we can interrogate that a bit more. I think it has come up, but there are a lot of projects where there still needs to be investigation. We are speaking to the minister to try and see how we can phase it in over the next 3 years. So it's not going to be just these 22 and that's it. I think in terms of the question relating to witness protection, I think I should also take that for more. What we are doing is when we start any investigation in your province, and we're investigating in all 9 provinces simultaneously. So in the Eastern Cape, for example, we have the most number of investigations in your province. It's a total of 4, whereas other provinces have 2 or 3 in some instances, like KZN. What we are doing is we are bringing on board the Asset for Future unit. We are bringing on board the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, the SAP. It's going to be a very integrated approach to how we deal with the project. We've got housing experts. We've got engineers who are going to go onto the ground. We say it's labor intensive because we have to send people onto the ground to go and verify value for money on the ground. In some instances where there's poor quality, the engineer is going to have to come back in terms of the bill of quantities to say that 4 million rand that is budgeted is in fact on the ground. Or if it isn't, he will give us that report. So you even have to send investigators to go and count those houses. If there's 2,000 houses in a project, we are going to get the surveyor general plans, take aerial photographs, superimpose those plans to find out if the houses have been built or not. And I think in terms of the, specifically with relation to the witness protection, what we will do is if we identify that there is a risk in a particular province with witnesses, what we will do is we will ask the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit and their prosecutors to come forward with giving us the instruction to have those witnesses placed in witness protection. So we definitely, we have had experience where witnesses have been killed. In KwaZulu-Natal, in the Newcastle municipality, we had 2 officials that were murdered. So like the Chief Director said, it's a huge problem, and it is, the Department of Human Settlements is most vulnerable. It's seen as one big cookie jar that anyone can tap into. And I think in terms of the corrupt beneficiaries and their protection, at the moment we have liaised with those people that are willing to give us statements. And if there's any imminent danger, we will put them into witness protection. So there is that support that we are getting from the SAP. So we don't engage in any investigation without having all the role players around the table. So if we identify that risk, then we will act. I think, with your permission, the explanation on prosecutions.
Okay.
There's one question which I think two members here raised, the one on the prosecution of 930, then you say doesn't reconcile the AEDs were 1608 and 9904 disciplinaries.
Mm.
I just want to bring your attention to the fact that those three numbers talk to different outcomes.
Okay.
The first one, 930 prosecutions, means that there was criminal intent, there was prima facie evidence, so we could take the people to court.
Okay.
The 1,608 means that there was civil action, where we go about the recovery. So it doesn't, it means either we cannot prove criminal intention, or there was an overpayment by the department, or there was negligence on the side of the department. So you can't necessarily hold the beneficiary accountable in terms of criminal action because they did nothing. There was no misrepresentation. So what we find is you can see the difference will talk to departmental negligence. It will also talk to overpayments. And in some instances, it also talks to not being able to prove a case. For example, if you don't have the Commissioner of Oaths who made the person, the beneficiary, swear to the contents in the application form, then you've got no grounds to say that that was a misrepresentation. Because what it could have meant is that someone merely captured the information incorrectly. So you can't prove fraud, you can't prove the misrepresentation. So that is why those two numbers don't talk to each other. So in those instances, we merely go after the civil remedy, which is signing the acknowledgement of debt. Then in terms of the 990 disciplinary cases, we've taken disciplinary action against all prosecuted officials, which is 930, and the balance of 60 is those very instances where you, even though you can't prove the criminal case, because the balance of proof in a disciplinary case is less, you can still go after them. So we didn't want them to get away with it. We will still take disciplinary action.
I think just to add on to that, we do on a monthly basis get a report on information, the status of issues related, and it's broken down into province by province. For instance, if you look at Mpumalanga, we submitted cases of about 103 for disciplinary, and we Western Cape 43, KwaZulu-Natal 338, Gauteng 189, Northwest 59, Free State is 7, Northern Cape is 4, Eastern Cape is 142, Limpopo is 105. That makes the total 990 of disciplinary cases that have been sent. And as I said at the beginning, the cases that relate to the officials that are employed by the national departments, the distribution is done via the DPSA itself. The cases that relate to the provincial employees, the cases are then sent by through the DPSA to the Premier's offices to make sure that they are dealt with at a higher level. What we've also done is to go a step further to say that we categorize the sanctions that need to be submitted out for the different categories of transgressions. So you'll have a level 3, level 2, level 1. We were trying to prevent a case where what ordinarily happens in the department is that people are then given just a warning. It lapses after 6 months, they do something else. But that does not really make a serious impact or send the right message about how serious this thing is. And there will be cases where, and even we looked at the cases where if this official that was in the department has defrauded on housing, because they've also done investigations as the SASA, we also look at if this person was also convicted there. And those kind of people, because they have two convictions now, they fall within a certain category and the sentence is a bit stronger based on the three categories that you've given. I just don't remember the categories very well. But that's how we are monitoring it on a monthly basis. On issues that we send to court, what is before court in progress, what is finalized at court, the number of AODs and the value. And I think that deals with the issues of the province, the question that was asked earlier on. The question that was raised about the differentiation between real and politically driven hotline cases, that is why we said in the presentation that when a hotline whistleblower brings information, you need to determine whether there is fact or not. And with the investigation, if the investigation takes place, you are able to determine who are the real perpetrators and what could be the probably likely be able to get, what could be the driving force behind that. It's not easy for us when we get a whistleblower that to determine whether it's politically related or even malicious in some instances, you know. So it has to go through a process so that we can determine the facts. How long do investors to take with each investigation? Because the risk is that some of the perpetrators are no longer with the affected institutions. One of the things that we and as Vanessa was saying, and she will add on, is that although we have a mandate, there's a mandate to go back from 1994 to a certain period, to guard against your unnecessary things happening, like prescription of debt, what we try to deal with the recent cases so that we make maximum impact, that the people are still there, they are currently defrauding the department. We deal with them now, and we still go back and deal with the cases that relate to the period before. And
if I can just add, I think in terms of real time and investigations that we are doing now, we intend to be completed with reports to the department and actions initiated in terms of criminal action, disciplinary, and claiming back money by the end of March on the 22 investigations. I think everyone can appreciate what a labor-intensive exercise. I think even getting documentation from municipalities and provincial departments is also a challenge. If you go and ask them for a contract, they just say it's lost. Then what do you investigate if you don't have a contract? There's a lot of issues, but what we said is, if that is the response, then we're going to have to hold someone accountable. Who was responsible at that time to ensure management of documentation? So it's not going to be a dead end for us. Even if we can take action, even against just the officials, the SIU will have to do it. But we hope to be finished with the first 22 by the end of March with reports to the department.
End of March next year.
Yes. It's a project plan that we sit on an annual basis and develop a project plan, and we cost it and resource it as such. The other main problem, as Vanessa is saying, is that the provinces do not have a good filing records management system. So you find that even with the subsidies, files cannot be found. That is why when you look at the issues that the AG raised, the 7,353, but the total number of files that could be handed over per province, if you look, for instance, records that are handed over, from Mpumalanga, the AG indicated 480, they could only hand over 415. They are still trying to find the balance, or they've already declared that they can't find it, and the reasons vary. One province had a flood, and they are saying because of that. So the flood is one thing. The issue is that they did not manage the records properly, because they should have been kept in a place where floods will not affect them. Yeah. And then you have Western Cape, where there's 572 identified by the AG. They could only hand over 361. KwaZulu-Natal handed over all they had. Gauteng had 2,188. They handed over only 1.3. Northwest had 552. They've handed over only 448. And they've declared that, they can't find these files, and there are processes that they are following to try and see if these files can be written off or whatever. So we won't be able to find those files. That means if those files include cases that were investigatable and we could recover something, we will have lost, because there's not much we can do. The information is not there. Free State had 280, and they only handed over 80 to date. Northern Cape had 90, they only handed over 61. Eastern Cape, they had 1,484. Mm-hmm. They only handed over 358.
Yeah.
And then Limpopo had 999. They only handed over 696. You know, so those are the issues that if records were there, we would have been able to analyze all 7,353, but we could unfortunately only analyze what we were given. And the reasons vary, and some of them have come out here to say that they can't find these files, And we said now they need to then take the department with, because on a monthly basis, what also the department did when this report came out, the minister then, Minister Sisulu, set up what they call a joint steering committee, where the national office and the provinces, we met on a monthly basis to get progress, where the provinces reported progress, and this, where this sort of thing, we are monitoring, where are the files, what are they doing with this information, and the other, and the SIU is part of that joint steering committee meeting as well. The issue around Imvula, these are some of the cases that we'll have to look at and see if they, because what we also get, we get cases from people report either to the president's hotline, people report either to the national hotline at the PSC, we get those referred to us, and then there are people that walk into the department to come in and report, we get people that write to the minister, and those get referred to our unit, the people that write to the DG come. So these are some of these areas that have been identified here. We will look into our database to see what has been done, and then what we then do with the information that gets to us, we then analyze it. Some cases are referred to the provinces for them to investigate, and we follow up progress. Some of the cases, because of the agency and probably the maybe something that the minister is concerned about or whatever, then we do the investigation ourselves, and some are referred to the special investigating unit. We'll just check on our database if some of these are here. If not, we'll then have to then probably get further information to see, because we can't just leave it. If there's a problem, we need to look at it. The issue about Bojanala as well, have you, it's not...
I've taken note of that comment about the 1,521 houses that are being vandalized. Sometimes what we found during the course of our investigation is that houses are left abandoned and incomplete for legitimate reasons. I'm not saying this might be the case in that in this project, but what we find is that because they don't do maybe a geotech analysis before they start building, then once they start laying foundations and for some of the houses, they will find that maybe they're dolomite underground, or they will find that they can't put proper infrastructure in place, so they're abandoned. Or in some instances, what you will find is that the province or the municipality itself runs out of funds and they can't pay the developer, so the developer walks off site. So we must understand that it's not always the developer or contractor at fault. In some instances, it is also the municipalities and the provinces that can't pay, and as a result, the developer has no option but to cut his losses and move away. So if we as investigators go to the ground and find that there's incomplete houses, for me, it says nothing. I first have to check what payments were made, was the developer paid, and what you will find is that there are legitimate reasons why building has stopped. So I think the department is aware of these findings, and I think a lot is being done, you know, to tighten the processes and systems. And that is the reason why the SIU spent a whole year doing walkthroughs in all the provinces trying to understand where the gaps are. Because if you don't fix the gaps, we are going to be reactive, but not proactive in the sense that we're not closing them. So come 10 years down the line, you will have the same problem. So that is why we took the time, we took a year, we documented everything that happens in a province, how they operate, is it in line with the code, is the information being captured accurately, which talks to the HSS, and also all the legislative amendments that need to be made, be it tightening up the contracts that are written by the department, which allows maybe for X percentage to be retained for more than 6 months, because when houses are built, you won't know immediately if they are good quality or not. Only after 6 months will it start cracking when the foundation starts shifting. So all of those things we are advising the department on, and they're aware of it. So I think in the future you will see that there is this improvement. But I think by investigating, you are showing any prospective developer or contractor that if you want to take a chance now with the department, you are going to be found out. So the deterrent effect, I think, of the investigation is huge. But I think the challenge is that there is not even enough investigators to go and investigate all. If you look at it, more than 50% is more than 4,800 contracts. And if it takes us 1 year to do 22, I think we can do the math. So the systems and the processes are going to be really important, the legislative amendments. And fortunately, I think the new minister is committed to ensuring that those gaps are closed. So I think in relation to that question, I've made notes of the specific projects you brought to my attention. If it is not on my list of 22 for this year, then I will also look at them to see, for example, if we fast-track something in the Northwest Province and we are finished before the time, before the end of March, then what we will do is we will put in one of these projects. But all I can say is that it's, the problem is overwhelming, but I guess the fact that the department has initiated the investigation, I think shows that they want to tackle the problem, there is commitment, but it will be slow progress. I think in, over the last 2 years, more than 1,600 prosecutions, and the lady asked, you know, how far are these cases? For example, we, with the government employees, we only have 62 cases pending at court. And if you think about how the justice system is, it's not easy to take 1,600 people through court. The SIU has their own prosecutors, their own court set up within the Justice Department to deal maybe on a day with 20 applicants. So there's definitely commitment, and we will try and get these projects to be investigated. I think there's one question I want to answer, which I think also the lady asked, as to why don't we lock the people up and put them in jail? That has been a question which many parliamentarians have asked in the past. And the thing is, I was also the national head of the SASA investigation previously. And there we had about 60,000 government employees that had at some time or the other received either a foster care grant, a child support grant. And what happens is, can you imagine removing 60,000 government officials, teachers, police officers, right through nurses? It will cripple the public service. So at the end of the day, even though the SIU makes the recommendation for disciplinary action, we cannot dictate to a department, you must fire the person or you have to, you know, dismiss it. You can't do that. The staff, for example, will dismiss. The Department of Education, on the other hand, will say, okay, 3 months suspended sentence or a warning. And that is where the Department of Human Settlements also cannot dictate to the various departments what sentence. We can advise, like Humo said, you can advise and you can say, see, this is how we categorize. But what they do in their disciplinary process is entirely up to them. And just to also let you know that the people that have contravened, what we've done is we did a profile of the offenders to see what type of people are these. Are they high flyers earning maybe more than 100,000 when the qualifying criteria is 3,500 a month? Or is it people that are living on the bread line? And the amazing thing is more than 50% of these cases, the people are just over the threshold income. So we're not talking about rich people. We're talking about people that work as cleaners, tea ladies, laborers. I'm not justifying their action, but what I'm saying is we must appreciate the economy we're living in and the circumstances that people find themselves in. In some instances, we go to a house where a granny is living. She's a cleaner in the school, and she's got 5 grandchildren that she's supporting. Even for our investigators to go and sign that AOD is a challenge. And that's the same granny we take to court, we prosecute. So if people think that maybe getting a suspended sentence and paying back the 25,000 rand AOD is not a penalty enough, then I think that's cause for an argument, because she has to pay that back from her pension or whatever little that she has, and we're hitting her where it hurts most, in her pocket. And believe me, like I said, the profile is largely people living just above that deadline.
Yeah. I think the other thing that we need to identify is that it's good that we get the information about some projects here. We have the provinces are not really forthcoming with the cases that needed to be prioritized. So as a result, we had to then do our own analysis. They had to do their own analysis and look at what are the key risk areas that can be used to select this project. Because it would have been easy if the MEC or the HOD would say, I have these problems, these constructs are problematic, I want them to be looked at. But we're not getting that easily from the provinces. That's one of the reasons why you probably find, even in the 20 that we have identified. Because we used our own analysis in the risk areas, we find that maybe 5 or 10 of those ones, we found that there's actually nothing really wrong with them. We have to go and select again. And in some instances also, the provinces are the problem. They don't have capacity to for project management. Therefore, the contractor then gets away with murder. If no inspections are done at the right time, the contractor will finish 10 houses. The inspector comes after 3 weeks, inspects 5 houses, but the other 5 is poor quality. Or those challenges that are there as well, with regard to why we have these problems with the houses that we are having.
We are getting late. I've got I wonder if the remaining questions can be written right in the answers, please.
Okay. You know why? I just leave her, leave them to continue. The thing is with us, we've got to correct we as members. Because when I request time and again that let's stick to 3 questions, and people, they don't feel whatever, they want to ask 10 questions per person. And now they are flowing, and it's us now who are crying. Let me hear from other members before I give the ruling, because they were still an outstanding... what's the feeling of other members before?
I'm still fasting.
No.
Wait, talk to me. I'm still cheering.
Yeah, talking to you, Julian.
Okay. What is your recommendation? Just a proposal.
Chairperson, I would propose that we allow them to round up. I also agree with Honorable Funeral that time is against us.
Okay.
But we can't just cut them like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Then you must excuse me. I've got an appointment with my caucus at 20 past, and it's now 20 past.
Okay, fine. Fine.
Thank you.
You just run now,
If I say you deal with the issue about the insolvency of the contractors, those that have become insolvent.
Thanks, Chair. Just in terms of the insolvency, I think a concern from one of the members was that if someone says they're insolvent, then, you know, that's it. But what we've done is, like I said, we've engaged the AFU, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, from the onset. So if a person has taken money from the department and delivered nothing, and he tries to disguise that money, and he buys maybe a house for his grandmother or a car for his son, we will find where that money is. We will follow the money until we find out where it went to. We will subpoena bank accounts, and AFU will seize actual properties, and they will sell them off. So we are currently in the process of, in fact, all the investigations are running with AFU, working very closely with the SRU to ensure that even in cases where they profess, inverted commas, that they are insolvent, bankrupt, we will not lay it at rest until we look at all their family members, their associate directors. If there's any property, we will find it, we will sell it and put the money back into CADA. I think the other question, I think that was important for, I think maybe the SRU to answer, was the question relating to the suspension of the municipal employees. I think the minister is currently in talks with the Minister of Local Government, because what we found is that there needs to be agreement from that minister to allow for the disciplinary process to go ahead in respect of municipal employees. So we should get some feedback very soon, and then we can initiate the process into disciplinary action for municipalities.
There are just two questions left. The other one was the what does the system do to prevent one person from getting a house in Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal? There were those issues as gaps in the system before, but the system has been tightened up to make sure that the ID numbers of the person is kept in the system. The system is able to identify if you are a previous receiver of a house. Those systems have been put in place, and find that in the new process that is not happening anymore. But where if it's in the system, but where it happens fraudulently by these people buying houses that have already been issued to somebody else, then that becomes another issue. But through the system has been tightened up to deal with that. we should not be seeing those happening anymore. The issues about, I think the other one, I don't know whether it's a question or a comment about what gave rise to the xenophobia issues that happened in Alexandra is that how do we then prioritize South Africans? I think the intention is to prioritize South Africans because we concentrate on the South African ID of the people, hoping that the ID is correct. So what will fail us is the Home Affairs system because we depend on the document that comes from them. Issue of acquisition of land. The department has established this housing development agency that is precisely in place to make sure that they acquire pockets of land for human settlement development. It started operating in late last year, and then also there's an agreement with the department and the public works to say that where there is land, government land, the department should be given first preference to consider if that land is suitable for human settlements, and we look at being the first people to buy to buy that land. So the department is making all sorts of plans to make sure that we acquire land for human settlement development. That deals with all the questions.
Okay. Now what am I going to suggest? Honorable members, on your behalf, I'd like to thank this presentation, but also with a note that there was still in one outstanding presentation, which is also very sensitive, than exactly like this one, whereby they were going to brief us about some of the money from finance, whatever budget, which is allocated to the department. But I don't think that will be doing justice if we can start or allow that presentation to take place, because a lot of members have left with different reasons. Because I'm scared of one thing, there is a plenary this afternoon, some they are going to debate. And they went to prepare themselves so that they can be able to participate this afternoon. And some they've got different commitments. Therefore, on the behalf of the committee, I'd like to thank you very, 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 I don't know how to express myself, but with the hope that you do something about some of the things which we raised, because the difference between what you raised and some of the way you were responding were practically from the provinces. We know what exactly. Once you open your mouth, I keep quiet and look at you, and no, but this one, it doesn't talk about Kuruman, it doesn't talk about the I, it doesn't talk about Kimberly, can name them. So I think we'll thanks once more. But to emphasize our apology, sincere apology, with the last presentation, allow me to request you that we'll communicate with you, maybe to come back in the due course. It might be before or after this soccer tournament, because that one also is very urgent to us, so that we can move together with you with a good understanding on what is happening. Because to us today, we're going to be privileged to get that first-hand information rather than to get it from the papers and running from other people. And also to hint, but not to go deep, that we need to be respected if we request whatever, because possibilities that people won't be allowed to continue, because members are very, very sensitive on how our are being treated. But at the moment, thank you, all of you, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir. But also, just off the record, why do you blame us for asking questions and then close the agenda? Why do you know the agenda so much?
Yeah.
Yes.